Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV series on Disney Plus. I say first season, I don't know if they're planning on doing second seasons of any of these Disney Plus shows or not.
It ended with the feeling a second show was coming.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it ended with, obviously we're doing spoilers, Falcon becoming Captain America. So even the end credit had, you know, Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
That's very true.
So if they were to do another season, they'd almost need to rename it if they do it that way. Then they had some very much loose ends that were kind of springboarded to, okay, that something's going to happen with this.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the Sharon Carter character. I've heard rumor they may do another movie, so it could go there. They could go into another show. I don't know where they're going.
Well, and as you point out, they could do a show either for Sharon Carter, just give her a show.
Mm-hmm.
Or
I don't think they could do just her, because she would be really the antagonist of the show they leave her.
I think they'd be doing her opposite U.S. Agent.
Man, I don't think having those two as the leads...
It wouldn't work for me, but I can see people thinking it.
Yeah, I don't know. Because they reveal that the power broker who reinvented the super soldier serum, given it to a bunch of people and stuff, was Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, she set up, and I know we're jumping to the end of this, we'll get to the rest of it in due time, don't worry, as basically now being back in the good graces of the American government and ready to sell every damn secret she can get her hands on.
She is so different from the character we first met in the movie.
Well, and the polar opposite of Peggy Carter.
Yeah. And I mean, admittedly, she's gone through a lot, not just in the movies and since the movies, but in the 5 years of the snap.
Yes. She was kind of cast aside due to the events of, I guess, the Winter Soldier movie.
Mm, yeah, because that was where we first saw Black Panther, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's had a rough couple of years, set herself up in Madripoor, which is the home of, not the home of the mutants, but that's a key nation in the mutant comics. So there was some speculation during the course of this that they were going to use it as a backdoor to, you know, introduce the mutants. They never did. We did see the Princess Bar, and it's funny because the episode where we see that, we've got Falcon, Winter Soldier, and Baron Zemo going in to go find some information, and I saw an article online that was basically, they didn't say that it was stolen from Star Trek, but it borrowed heavily, because it's very reminiscent of the episode of Picard, where they dressed up one of the guys funny.
Yeah.
Had the cyborg character being auctioned off, essentially.
Yeah.
In a bar, and basically almost, you know,
beat for beat,
you know, that episode. And while watching it, it didn't really, you know, shout out to me that way. But when the article was put together, I'm like, yep.
That's fine.
And this was basically the better version. It felt out of place in Picard.
Yeah.
Here, they didn't play it as ludicrously, and really I think this show had just some really good talent all the way around.
Yes. Well, and here you also had Zemo, who it was kind of, do we trust him? Do we know what his motives are? Particularly in that sequence of scenes. So we had some looks being exchanged between characters that were very meaningful. At that point particularly, we had Sam assuring Bucky, I won't let you cross any lines. I won't let you fall over that edge. So Sam is trying to, quote, stay in character as the one he's undercover as, even as he's doing his job, if you will, as Sam, being the moral compass.
Well, and Bucky was trying to stay in character as kind of the brainwashed Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some great moments in that scene and throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when you've got some of these actors that have just great range, have some great material to work with,
mm-hmm.
and just some great interplay between them.
Yeah. Well, overall for me, the six episodes were really good. And there were times, especially early on, when I was asking you, is this what we need right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if this aired 6 months ago, a year ago, compared to when it finally came out because of COVID delays.
Yeah.
Was this what American society and culture needed in terms of storyline and characters? And I think I would give it 90%. They brought it home, and yeah, I think they delivered.
They landed the ending, that's for sure. And there were a couple of times early on, though, they needed to set up what they did to get there. But it had a bit of a dark take at times.
I still am not convinced John Walker and that Captain America is what we needed right now. And that that path is a path that was great to have right now. But it gave Sam Wilson and Falcon this great journey. And what they did with his character was beautiful, particularly in the context of right now.
I took it with the John Walker character as a couple of things. One, kind of sort of doing the arc he had in the comics, although it was a different setup because we didn't have Sam and Bucky involved and all that stuff. But also, it's not the Captain America we need right now, but it's the kind of person we have right now that was kind of echoing, you know, maybe all the police aren't acting the way we would like them to, but this is what we got. So kind of, to me, there was that sort of parallel. I saw it as reflecting, an attempt to reflect on society, not be aspirational to what society should be, because that wasn't his role, that was Sam's role.
But when they presented him with the cap is back, and we had the thing at his high school football stadium,
mm-hmm.
and we're given this whole, he's the best of the best in every way.
To me, that was, again, going a riff on kind of in the comics of, at that point in the comics, Steve Rogers had turned his back on the U.S. government because he had a parting of ways. He was supporting the American dream, not the American reality.
Mm.
He was the symbol of hope, not de facto what is. So he'd lost the shield. I think it was the commissioner or whatever in the comics had basically found another guy, gave him the shield, and that's what led to John Walker as Captain America, Battlestar, who I thought was a great character in the comics. I thought was really well done here. Didn't like the end game for that character.
Mm.
But I see where they wanted to go that way just to kind of up the stakes. So, I mean, the John Walker character was one that I think we were supposed to think that we were supposed to like, but then know we were supposed to hate.
Well, we're pre-programmed to like anyone who wears the Captain America suit and shield.
Yeah, but it's like we chatted at one point on text or whatever afterwards. This is what I call the Pulaski effect. When Dr. Pulaski was introduced in the second season of Next Generation, when Dr. Crusher had kind of taken the season off, one of the first things they had that character do was antagonize Data.
Mm-hmm.
Mispronouncing his name. It's like Data. It's like, oh, my name is Data. Well, what's the difference? Well, one is my name, one's not. You know, kind of trying to get the Spock-McCoy bantering kind of thing going. But it came across as, here's a character we've known for a year at that point. Here's the new one being a jerk to them.
Mm-hmm.
It set us off that character.
Yeah.
So here, we've known Cap for, what, a decade now. We've known Falcon and Winter Soldier for the majority of that time. Steve had given Sam the shield. Sam said, oh, I'm not worthy. And then John gets it and is kind of encroaching on that territory. Well, we're not supposed to like him.
Slowing down, Sam's intent was that the Cap shield go to the museum.
Yeah, that the name Captain America kind of be retired and it become a museum piece. Absolutely. Yeah. To the point of presenting it to the museum and then putting it in a display.
Yeah.
And then almost the minute he's walked out of the room, it seems like giving it to somebody else. I did like how War Machine guest starred in that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
They had a couple of cameos like that that were just kind of fun.
Yeah.
But
it just seemed like every time they made the point of, this is not the Captain America you're used to. This is not the Captain America that you respect, like, etc. They say, oh, well, maybe we have a mayor point. Let's double down.
I guess my disappointment with the John Walker character was he seemed to come out of it even after brutally murdering somebody. I mean, it happened off camera, but I took it as a decapitation.
Give him out. Blood on the shield. I think you're right.
And the angle. Yeah. I mean, it couldn't have been anything else. And he gets pretty much a slap on the wrist. I mean, yes, he's booted out of the service, loses his pension, or, you know.
He does that in a on a public street highly, in front of zillions of cell phone cameras.
Yeah, highly covered with cameras situation. So there's no doubt at all.
Yeah.
And he gets basically disavowed.
Yeah.
But cut loose. So no prison time, no nothing, not even a court martial. And then at the end, he's there fighting alongside Sam and Bucky. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of just, yeah, it's okay.
And he still has the suit. Because he apparently never turned that back in.
They never asked for that. They asked for the shield, not the suit.
True, but...
And it's funny because in the comics, the suit he winds up with, which is just the black version of it, is very much what Steve Rogers was wearing as the captain at the time. With a, I think, all black shield, maybe, that he'd gotten probably from Black Panther. And it was either all vibranium versus the vibranium and adamantium mixed, whatever. But then once Steve Rogers became Captain America again, John Walker essentially took over that costume when he became U.S. agent. And he's had a few others and stuff. But it's funny because that it all happened, I want to say around issue 350 or so of Captain America, give or take a year or two on either side. I forget exactly when. But that's like halfway through where the run kind of currently is. So it's a ways back.
Yeah. Well, they tried to, at one point, set it up as if John Walker's like, oh, no, I get it. You're just jealous they gave me the shield.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because early on, it was almost like two buddy cop movies were colliding.
Yeah.
Because you had the dysfunctional buddy cops of Sam and Bucky.
I loved the, was it a kind of a enforced therapy scene?
Oh, yeah. The couples counseling, essentially, they were put in.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bucky needed counseling.
Well, there is that, but it's kind of, and then they turn to the shrink with basically a, and thank you for making that even more awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. We have those two. And again, the interplay between them, terrific.
Yeah.
But then when we get the John Walker, Captain America, and Battlestar, and those two as kind of the buddy stuff at times, I thought they did some good stuff there.
They did some good stuff, but what disappointed me there was that you basically had a yes man. Like, what do you think happens when you take the super serum? Well, it just makes you more. Not there couldn't possibly be a downside.
I didn't take it to him being a yes man so much as that's what he thought in terms. I mean,
he was just such a single-minded cheerleader.
They didn't he was the least developed of the characters, and he was there to support John Walker.
Mm-hmm. There was, to me, it was just so much a, yeah, whatever you want, I'm going to support it, I'm going to cheer it, I'm not ever going to tell you what you don't want to hear.
Well, they gave so little thought to that character that they never gave an in-story explanation for why he was getting the codename Battlestar, why he was essentially the sidekick for Captain America. And it all comes back to, well, that's what happened in the comics. But his character was just, they needed somebody for him to be with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because early on, we had a similar situation with Falcon and Torres, the military guy that was helping him fix some stuff. It was his contact in the Middle East and some stuff like that. And that character later became the second Falcon. I'm going to backpedal on the second. I think he's the second Falcon, but they've got so many characters in Marvel, who knows? But he became the Falcon within the last 5 years or so. And I'm trying to remember if it was the Power Broker or somebody had done some experimentations on him that gave him wings and stuff like that. Now, in the comics, Red Wing is a bird. So when you take the DNA from that bird and kind of infuse it in this guy, this is where you come up with a more animalish Falcon character. Here, the Red Wing is a magic AI kind of drone or whatever that not only was created, I was never quite clear who'd created the wings originally. It was a government thing originally in the movies. But I couldn't tell by the time we'd gotten to this version if it had been amped up by Wakanda.
The very final version came from Wakanda.
The final version did.
Yeah.
But the version we started the series with.
No idea.
I don't remember where its origin was, because it seemed a lot more high tech than what he'd had originally in the movies. And I don't recall, well, I guess between Winter Soldier and Civil War, there was time for Tony Stark to have upgraded it. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what had happened. It's just, again, these things are now spread across, you know, a decade or something of time. It's easy to get a little lost. But this gave a lot more insight as to the challenges the world was having when half the population got snapped out and blipped back 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
We see some of that from Sam's personal perspective.
Yeah.
But then also this whole global, what was the GCR or whatever, Global
Refugee
Commission, or I forget what it was.
Well, and it's funny because throughout I was mentally drawing comparisons really with post-Nazi Germany, because what happened in East Germany was kind of, okay, you're on the wrong side of things, whether it's you were Jewish and your land got confiscated,
mm-hmm.
or there was a long list of reasons your stuff got confiscated, but it was part Nazis and it was part when the Soviets came in, mm-hmm. for whichever reason it got confiscated. But being a communist now government under the Russians, it was simply assigned. So suddenly new families are assigned to the existing houses. Now let's fast forward to the 1990s. We're reunifying Germany. And part of that reunification was you can petition to get your home back.
Yeah, but somebody's living there.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the kinds of issues that they tell us about, but we never really saw firsthand for the most part.
In Germany, those petitions and that process was still going on in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all this, you know, if upgrades were made. Well, we're talking about since the 1950s.
Yeah, of course upgrades were made over the last, you know, few decades.
Then you have to reimburse. And then it's based on how recent they were. There was a formula.
Yeah.
And you could only get things back if it was a private residence. Like when the current occupants died, your heirs could get it back.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. And so I'm thinking about all of this. And I'm like, you know, they really did have a wealth of real world stuff mm-hmm. to look to as they're saying, okay, so what happens when these people blip back in and suddenly say, wait, that's my home?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I would have thought that after 5 years, the food production and all of that would have kind of ramped to that level.
Well, and that's the thing to me is everything kind of cut in half was my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're saying, you've cut your food production in half. You've cut your electricity supply in half.
Potentially, yeah.
You've cut your gasoline supply in half.
Electricity and gas, I don't know exactly, because, I mean, there's certain things that there's a baseline to keep certain things going, but the bottom line is you've ramped down to some degree on everything.
But I would think you've stopped using some power generation stations, stopped maintaining some things. I would think that there were all kinds of things. And some of the things we were getting in the show were things like Sam Wilson has no credit report and credit rating for mm-hmm. 5 years. You know, where's your pay history for the past 5 years?
You know, it's funny because online there were a lot of people that were kind of slamming Tony Stark for this. And I'm like, wait a sec. Okay, we're a little bit after Endgame, obviously. A few months, I think. Mm-hmm. But Tony died in Endgame.
So technically they should be blaming Pepper Potts.
Well, no.
The grieving widow.
Because at that whole point, Sam had just come back after having been gone for so many years. And when he had all left and stuff, they had not really gotten over the whole Civil War thing.
Agreed.
So, but I don't think there was any reason even Pepper Potts would have said, you know, yeah, we should start paying money to this family, even though, you know.
There's also the question, though, of was he employed by the U.S. government? In which case, when you go from...
He was on the run.
Okay, but for any of them. Because when you go from either the KIA list or the MIA list to the, oh, wait, you should be on the POW list, or even better, the we found you and brought you home list.
Yeah.
You get back pay.
Yeah, but given the events of Civil War and stuff, they were kind of persona non grata and on the run and stuff, leading into...
But see, I would have liked for the people who were fighting for the rights of the people who came back,
yeah,
to be launching a campaign that would basically bankrupted the governments of you owe 5 years back pay to every soldier who's returned, every police officer who's returned.
Or just deal with the fact that these countries all suddenly had half their tax base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole show to be done on, you know, how does the world survive having their population cut in half? And then, obviously, they survive for 5 years, because we've kind of glossed through that in Endgame. But then, how do you survive a sudden doubling of the population?
Yeah.
So, they at least tried to address it here, which I thought was good. The whole Flag Smasher stuff, I liked, but was very different than what it was in the comics.
Mm.
Flag Smasher was a character that had a very monochromatic black and white costume. It actually was, I thought, a cool looking costume, visually striking and stuff. And he was the leader, or in association with Ultimatum, I think it was, which I'm pretty sure was an acronym that stood for something. Because this was, you know, 80s, 90s Marvel, they could have an acronym for just about anything. And they did some cool stuff with that group, and reusing the Flag Smasher name here, I didn't have any problem with. It just didn't seem to have any direct connection to that stuff. And I'm sure when they go through and do these movies, these TV shows and such, they're looking through the history of kind of that branch of the Marvel, you know, legacy in history and stuff, to see, okay, we're definitely going to pull this. This is something we could do an Easter egg on, or a name we can reuse, or something of that sort.
Yeah.
So that whole arc with that kind of militant faction of trying to, you know, force the governments to do right by all these people who came back was nice. It was good. It made sense. I just, again, think there's this whole other show that could have been done. I mean, you could do that just, again, as the basis of a show.
Well, you could almost do a show that's, I almost want to say it's either an episode a month or an episode a year through the snap. Where you're just kind of, you start at the snap with two or three families or a whole block. Do kind of the Desperate Housewives, do the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Where half the neighborhood vanishes and suddenly you've got half the houses are empty, or half the houses, half the families are gone.
Yeah. Or which, a mix thereof.
Yeah. And so now when you have the teenagers who are still stuck at home with the parent or parents saying, you know, you can't do that. Well, if you live under my roof, well, I'm not gonna. The house next door's empty. I'm going there.
Or you've got one family where the parents are gone, another family where the kids are gone.
Yes.
I mean, there's a whole mess of stuff there.
Yes.
So it's... it's definitely something that I think could be fun to explore, and I like how they were starting to touch on it quite a bit here, but at arm's length.
Yeah.
And we got a hint of it in WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
So I like how they've got more room to be exploring some of this stuff, because I thought all six of these episodes stood alone decently.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff happened, ended on a good note, yet definitely told, you know, a six-episode arc.
Well, like you said, when with the buddy cop bit, they were fun in the buddy cop aspect. And that just made them relaxing to watch.
Yeah. Well, and also they started with a really good action sequence with Falcon.
Yes.
You know, and set that up pretty well. And there were a couple of other episodes, I guess second or third thereabouts, where, okay, he's just a guy with a gun and doesn't even have a suit on, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, technically he's the Falcon, but not really.
Well, and then he got his wings ripped off.
Yeah, well, again, they had some really good fight sequences a little later in the series.
I do feel they cheated on John Walker taking the serum.
We never saw it, and we never got total confirmation that he did. I had thought by that fourth episode he was exhibiting super strength.
We got one person who said, you did the right thing taking it.
Yep.
And he didn't deny it. We saw him pocket it, and then probably within 10 minutes, give or take, of their reality, less than that screen time, we saw him exhibiting signs of having used it. And what gets me is, really? He pocketed it, he ingested, whatever he did with it. There's no go through screaming agony.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no sweat pouring off his face. There's no consequences or...
No transformation.
There you go.
Well, we never saw anyone take this variant of it.
True.
So we have no idea how it works or what the ramifications are, what the side effects.
He seemed to pop a Tylenol on the run.
Yeah, because you're basically going on the theory... Well, I'm...
Upstairs, he's in the fight scene, Battlestar dies. Downstairs, he chases after people. Downstairs, all but one vial breaks. He pockets the vial. They finish the chase scene outside. He has used the vial, and we have super strength.
Okay. I was trying to work my way through.
That's how it played out for me.
I'd have to rewatch that third or fourth episode.
I could be a little off, but that's about how it played out for me.
Yeah, it was never entirely clear exactly when he had taken it, because I had thought he had pocketed it, and then he and Battlestar had a scene at a cafe or something, and it's like, oh, would you take it? So I thought there was more time elapsed in the story.
I thought they had that scene before, because they knew that they were chasing 12 bottles of it.
I thought it was, and again, we watched this a week or so back, I thought it was after, and I thought that's why he was asking.
I think you're thinking it's after because of the way the previously on cut it back together.
That could be too. I hate it when they cheat that way.
Yeah.
And part of this is we watched the first few episodes as they were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last two back to back.
Which is part of why we tend to marathon. It keeps it crisper in the mind.
It does. And even then, six episodes is easy for me to get kind of convoluted because... Mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of different stories kind of going in my head at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think they did a good job. I would say one of the weaknesses for me, more so in the later episodes, the two we watched this evening, was the unsteady cam.
Yes.
There were a couple of times where between that and how dark it was, because they were doing fights at night, I was having a hard time following the action.
I agree with that. And I would just like to note that the new Captain America with wings suit and goggles, thank God he has the goggles because he can fly from Louisiana to New York faster than a commercial jet. I'm just saying.
Yeah. You do the math on... Well, before we even get to that, there's the whole... At one point, he was over in, I don't know, Prague or wherever. Then he's visiting Isaiah, and we got to talk about Isaiah, in wherever that, Maryland, I think it was.
That's got to be the roughly D.C. area.
And then he's back in New Orleans, and then he's down in New York. And some of this, maybe he's flying commercials. The bit to New York, he's clearly flying solo. So, yeah, how he gets there that fast.
Literally, the sun is setting as he opens the suitcase with the new suit. And he gets there the same night to New York.
Yeah, definitely faster than a commercial flight.
So thank God he had those goggles to protect his eyes.
Yeah, good strong bladder too, because it's going to take a little while. Isaiah, though, Carl Lumley's character, as one of the other people who'd gotten the Super Soldier Serum, I guess in this reality after Steve, because they were trying to recreate it and used him as guinea pigs.
Yeah.
In the comics, it was a retcon of he was one of the guinea pigs before Steve got it.
Mm, interesting.
And there were some more side effects to it and stuff that kind of impacted him in the comics that weren't here. But I thought bringing that character in was nice. He was well used. I think also having his grandson,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a nothing part, was cool because that grandson in the comics... became Patriot, who's a member of the Young Avengers. Other members of the Young Avengers are female Hawkeye that we're going to get in that series when it starts, Wiccan and Hulkling, which are the two kids from WandaVision, Stature, who is Ant-Man's daughter from those movies, and then Iron Lad, who was essentially Kang, a time traveler that we haven't seen anywhere, but wouldn't shock me if shows up in Loki.
Mm.
So they could be setting up a bunch of characters to do a Young Avengers.
One of the scenes I loved was right after we saw Isaiah the first time. And again, buddy cop type scene where Sam and Bucky are coming out of the house and they're walking up the street and they are arguing.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy cop style, but it's very much a, why didn't you tell me this sooner? Would you have believed me? Etc. And the cops pull up.
Oh, yeah.
Because a white man and a black man are arguing.
Uh-huh.
And they're asking Bucky, is this man bothering you? And it's basically, no, I'm bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it.
Well, and that's what led to them being back at the police station and pulling in the therapist for the couples counseling.
Yes, yes.
Well, and what I liked about all that stuff, and that scene was a great example when they're walking down the street, the back and forth between those two, that kind of bickering and buddy cop stuff, we've seen shows where they really try to do that, and it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hawaii Five-0
yeah.
is a good example of that.
That was what came to mind for me.
Whereas these two guys, I felt, had a really good chemistry and back and forth between them.
Well, and when they got to the police station, it was basically Sam, who the cops had, you know, pulled over because a black man was arguing with a white man. Sam gets released almost immediately with, you know, we're sorry, you're a decorated guy.
Once they realize
the Falcon,
who he is.
You know.
Because there are no secret identities in this world.
No. But poor Bucky, he missed one of his mandated counseling sessions. He has to wait in a cell till the therapist shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, I did think that was kind of funny.
So it was very much a, let's just spin these assumptions mm-hmm. about the black man versus the white man. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, Anthony Mackie just did a terrific job here in all the different facets of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Him as the Falcon, the hero there, as kind of the grief counselor part of his character. He's coaching Bucky at one point really well. And just the family man side of him, they gave him just a ton of great material to work with.
Yeah. Well, and he did a great job when he called up all the people in the community
mm-hmm.
that his parents had done stuff for over the years. And it was basically, we need a favor this time.
Well, and starts by kind of, you remember my parents? Oh, yeah, I loved your parents. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I liked how they built up that sense of community where his sister lives.
Mm-hmm.
And while we didn't really get to Wakanda, we feel a little of that sense of community and stuff with a few of those characters kind of coming and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They covered a lot of ground, both physically and metaphorically, in this series. And it really shows how fun the Marvel Universe can be in, I don't want to say episodic TV, because it's not episodic TV. I mean, it has episodes, but it's a streaming thing. And it really hit the nice balance between, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is very episodic with ongoing arcs, but then, and the other extreme of like the Netflix shows, where it was all arc in any given episode was just a chapter.
Yeah.
You know? So they've really, I think, at Disney Plus and Marvel and Studios and stuff, upped their game on a lot of this.
Yeah.
And to put this kind of production values in play, everything from the end credits type stuff, which I thought was kind of cool, to some of the fight scenes and whatnot, and really have a story that never really kind of dragged at any point.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleased.
Well, and like you said, they landed the ending very nicely. I mean, I wasn't thrilled with John Walker even at the end.
I would have liked for it to have seemed like there was more repercussions, and then he was kind of getting roped in as a black ops guy behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's the one part where I say like 90% for me, they landed the ending. And then there's that 10% over on the John Walker side where I'm like, eh, maybe you kind of fumbled there.
I could definitely see where they could take him and the Contessa as a series.
The problem is, to me, he's still needs a therapist big time.
Oh,
he
absolutely
needs a redemption arc big time.
He does. He does. And I think that would be what you would need to do with him. And I think you would also want to flesh out the Contessa, who in the comics was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., love interest of Nick Fury and such. What is her role in this world? And kind of flesh that out.
Because, I mean, I came out of it seeing him as mentally unstable and challenged to see him as even one of the good guys, much less a good guy.
He's certainly a good guy in his own mind, but yeah. And it's something that if they were to go, they're going to do more with the character. I can't see them not. But if they were to do like a streaming series with him or something, do they go straight to the redemption arc? Do they get him a little darker first and then he realizes he needs that? Or how does that play out? There's a couple of ways they could go.
Well, his wife already seems to realize that he's skewing off track based on reaction shots, mm-hmm. etc. So to me, the worst thing they could do is kill his wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would definitely set him off. And yeah, I don't know what their game plan is with that character.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I would recommend they do with him. He was an instrumental part of the Captain America ongoing arc for quite some time. But that was also during a period of time where having kind of cloned characters happened a lot. You had Thor and then you had Thunderstrike, which was somebody who used to be Thor for a little bit, now isn't because the real Thor's back, but he's got another mace, so he's got powers, you know. And at one point, he even had to change up his look because he was getting confused for Thor. And then you also had a few other characters. There was one point where you could take, granted you'd have to handpick this Avengers team, but you could take a team of Avengers and have them team up with another team of their kind of knockoff character versions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you've got War Machine for Iron Man, you've got Namorita for Namor, you've got, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. So, in the big picture, there's certainly a lot of places they could use U.S. Agent. He'd been a member of, I want to say, the West Coast Avengers. But, I mean, we're not even really sure what the Avengers are kind of up to these days post-Endgame. Because they haven't really revealed that in any of the stuff that took place afterwards, which would be the Spider-Man Far From Home movie, WandaVision, and now this.
We got an update from space. That's all I remember.
That was in the Spider-Man one with Nick. And that, I think, will play out in the Secret Invasion storyline they're going to do. I mean, they definitely have a plan. And this was a more straightforward action-adventure kind of a thing that you would have expected from the movies versus WandaVision that was very sitcomish and good, and then kind of got back to where the movie sensibility was. This had the movie sensibility throughout, and I definitely think if they decide to continue to lean into the streaming platform, which pandemic and stuff, I think they will, that they can do a lot of these slightly longer-form stories. And, you know, 6 hours is good.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of some of the British series.
Yeah. It's something where you've got enough room that you can do more than you could do in a movie, but not so much more that it's like, geez, come on.
Yeah.
Or you lose your way and get a little indulgent. And it's something that you could, if you wanted to marathon this on a Saturday afternoon, you easily could.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, like, the Netflix shows, that's 12 hours or something. That's a bigger time investment. But I think they could balance these kinds of things where they want to do a little bit more in-depth or whatever and still do some of the movies where they want to do a bit more of the set-piece action adventure roller coaster ride kind of thing and weave the two kind of back and forth and use both for some really cool universe building.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this was good stuff. I definitely want to see more of all of these characters. They've certainly teased setting up things like the Young Avengers, Sharon Carter going and doing stuff. Sam is Captain America. So I have no doubt we're going to see some of these things play out over time. I just don't know exactly where or when yet.
Yeah, I look forward to more, and I definitely think this was worth watching and should be watched.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.